Welcome to Read It Reddit. This will be an extra long episode, so please try to fill out the form in the description, so we could make this podcast better for you. We will be reading from r/talesfromtechsupport. Our first post is by Danjkb. Obligatory, this happened a few years ago, and I'm not in IT, but I'm a techie kinda guy. Also, it's a bit of a long one, sorry. A few years back I was a production supervisor for a manufacturing company. Part of the job involved booking batches into stock once they'd been completed, generally into separate parts, so for instance, one batch could make 30 smaller batches or 100 or so on. Once complete and divided up, this involved manually going into each page for each separate batch, and adding an additional info as to details of the batch. This could take a while, to type it all out. After a couple of weeks of doing this, I'm a little ashamed it took me this long. I got sick of having to type out all of the same info into each page. So I stopped what I was doing, and thought about how I could make this easier for myself, and how I could automate the process. After some time playing around, I realized that I could bring up all pages of each of the smaller batches at once, and could switch between them with Ctrl+UP/DOWN, and that wherever the cursor was it would stay in the respective field, so I could cut and paste it relatively easily. This was good, but would still take far too long. Frustratingly, I couldn't install any extra software as the IT department has locked it down pretty well, and was pretty restrictive. Fair enough, but it didn't really help me. After a bit of googling around, I figured out that VBS scripts might be my answer. For those who don't know, VBS scripts can imitate keystrokes, can be made in Notepad, and don't need installing. Having never made one before in my life, I thought I'd give it a go. I wrote myself a little template for the info, and made it so that I would type the variable into the first field and hit go on the script. It would cut and paste the variable into the relevant places, type out the rest of the template, copy the entire set of text, save the record, and move down to the next page. After that it went on to phase 2, which was a case of paste, save, move to next record, and so on. I had to add in some waiting time to allow for the record to save, otherwise it would try and do things too quickly and mess up the order, but other than that, it worked remarkably well. All I needed to do was copy phase 2 part of the script and paste it about 500 times so that it would keep running. Luckily, when it got to the final record, all it would do was overwrite the entire field and resave it, so it didn't cause me any issues. Overall, took me about a day to teach myself what to do, and about half of the next day playing around and troubleshooting. But boy, this baby saved me so much time in the long run. What used to take me 2 to 4 hours, depending on how many sub-batches there were, now took me all of 10 seconds, and I could walk away, let the computer do its thing, and do something else in the office. Once, I nearly got caught using it when someone who sat nearby asked what my computer was doing moving around without me doing anything with it. I was working through a worksheet at the time and clearly not on it. I just muttered something about it had been playing up lately, and I needed to take it to IT. She gave me an odd look, but just left it alone. Our next post is by 40-something commuter. I'd been in a contract role doing IT support at a company for almost 2 years. Got on with everyone, did the job well, never any issues with the boss or colleagues. Great job, only 15 minutes from home, and the pay was pretty good. I'd spent most of my last few weeks working on a schedule of upgrades to our email system, had booked in all users for hour-long appointments to upgrade their machines during the coming month, and was generally as busy as a normal IT department would be. No slacking off. Got pulled into hours on the 1st of December at 10 a.m, told that my contract wouldn't be renewed after the 31st of December, and I now had 15 minutes to clear my desk and leave. They would however continue to pay me until the 31st of December, as per my contract. Why wouldn't they let me stay and work until then, tie up all the loose ends, and carry out all the upgrades I'd scheduled with people? Company policy. I was shell-shocked as to why they couldn't trust me, and quietly returned to my desk, deleted a couple of personal files from my computer, gathered my stuff, and managed to mumble CIA to my 3 colleagues, who were equally as shocked. My boss escorted me out of the building, and at the door I said I'd like to say it's been nice working here, but I can't right now, and stormed out, seething as there had been lots of people there I would have liked to say a proper goodbye to, have Christmas drinks with, etc. Plus I realized I had left my favorite mug behind, and damn it, I loved that mug, but there was no way I could go back in now. What upset me most was the feeling that people would have been talking about me as in OMG 40-something commuter must have been doing something bad to get escorted out. Within 5 days of job hunting I had a new job starting on the 3rd of January. Spent all of December relaxing, not having to slog to work through snow and ice and bad weather, and being able to see friends and family over Christmas without call-outs or weekend working. They replaced my contract role with a permanent role. I suggested to a friend of mine that I'd worked with before that he should apply. He got the job. Joke was on them, I knew this guy was lazy, took multiple long breaks whenever he could, and wasn't really very good at his job. He stayed with them about 3 incompetent years. Did him a favor as he needed a job, screwed them over as I knew he would be rubbish. Our next post is by Codify. Another recent EFTS post reminded me of this gem. Back when I was in college, I had a job as a part-time PC tech for a rather large regional IT contractor in the SF Bay Area. One of our bigger contracted clients was a large medical non-profit, Med Group Co., that we maintained with a bi-weekly maintenance contract. Every 2 weeks or so, we'd send a handful of techs out to do a quick sweep for problems, tune up their printers, and perform rotating scheduled maintenance on some of their leased PCs and networking equipment. They had more than 600 computers spread across several medical campuses, along with dozens of shared laser printers and associated network closets. We had a solid maintenance plan in place to keep up with everything, and they'd been a happy client for many, many years. One day, out of the blue, Med Group Co.'s CTO Tom called us up and asked to renegotiate the contract. The medical group was having financial problems and had just gutted his IT budget. He couldn't afford us any longer. After a long sit down with our sales and support people, we placed the client into a new and cheaper contract. Rather than visit every 2 weeks, we'd shift them onto a semi-annual maintenance plan. We'd come out twice a year to do regular maintenance, and all other calls would be handled on an on-demand basis. Equipment failures would be covered under the lease warranties, but anything beyond that would involve a per-call support charge. The maintenance visits would be more disruptive and require a larger number of techs, but the overall contract cost was substantially lower. 6 figures annually lower. We warned them that moving to an on-demand based support model would be a bit of an adjustment. Because we'd been visiting every 2 weeks, the client had never used our ticketing system before. Their employees usually just jotted their computer issues down on a piece of paper and taped them to the sides of their monitors, knowing that we'd be by within a couple of weeks to get them fixed. We emphasized to the client that this might be an employee training issue, but the CTO insisted that he could get his users trained to use the new ticketing system and that it wouldn't be a problem. Fast forward 5 months. Our department manager had started to plan the first of Med Group Co.'s semi-annual maintenance visits and opened their ticket history to see whether they'd been having any recurring issues that might need special attention. Nada. And by nada, I don't mean no recurring issues. I mean no issues at all. The company hadn't filed a single ticket. That was unlikely. At a minimum, they should have statistically had at least a half dozen PC crashes during that period, and their printers should have required some maintenance. In hindsight, the manager later admitted that we should have followed up with the company sooner after the contract switch, but we had a lot of clients and support was spread across several teams, so nobody had noticed that one of our biggest clients hadn't logged a single ticket. Because Med Group Co. hadn't logged any complaints, there was a general assumption that the client was submitting tickets and that they were being handled by one of the other teams. Our department manager, worried about the discovery, called up their CTO's office and asked for Tom. He was even more worried when the receptionist responded with, "I'm sorry, but Tom retired 3 months ago." Would you like to speak with our new CTO, Dave? Can I ask who's calling? Please hold while I get him on the line. After a long time on hold, the receptionist came back on with a curt, Dave isn't currently available to speak with you, and he said that we no longer do business with your company. Can I take a message? What? We just signed a 5-year, $3+ million contract. You bet we'd like to leave a message. CTO Dave called us back the next day. He dove right in and wasn't kind. Your company violated our contract and we fired you. When I was hired, we had more than 50 computers that weren't working at all. Nothing had been maintained in months, and our printers were a disaster. Every single user had support requests that had never been addressed. This was the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen. You completely abandoned us, and we're contracted with Competitor Corp for our maintenance from now on. What again? Our support manager patiently explained to their CTO that we hadn't abandoned anything, and that we had a signed contract stating that we'd only be doing on-sites every 6 months. As for their claims that we'd failed to support them, we pointed out that the company had never logged a single support ticket. We'd have happily fixed anything they requested, but they'd never asked. The new CTO, looking over a freshly emailed, newly scanned copy of the current, signed contract, was dumbfounded. He'd never seen it before. He'd have to call us back. 2 days later, our company leadership, CTO Dave, Medgroup Co-CEO, and a bunch of lawyers sat down for a meeting. Apparently, Medgroup Co. had a cost savings benefit they offered to their employees. If you find a way to reduce operating costs, the company will credit the first year's savings to the employee as a bounty. Literally, if an employee found a way to save the company $1 million a year, they'd give the employee $1 million. I'd want that deal. CTO Tom wanted that deal too. As it turned out, there had never been any budget cuts. Tom had simply known his retirement was approaching and renegotiated the contract to shave nearly $250,000 off Medgroup Co.'s IP maintenance contract, neatly pocketing that $250,000 bounty for himself as he headed out the door. This deception left Medgroup Co. in a tough position. They still had 4.5 years left on their 5-year, $3+ million contract with our company. And they'd just signed a new 5-year, $4 million contract with Competitor Corp. Both contracts were binding. Medco Group was stuck. Because they'd been a customer for so long, our CEO had a bit of sympathy and made them an offer. He'd allow them to end their contract for $1 million on the stipulation that they sign an agreement to rejoin our company when their 5-year contract with Competitor Corp expired. He even sweetened the deal by offering to credit the $1 million to their new contract when they returned. They'd been a profitable customer for a very long time, and he was willing to take a short-term hit in exchange for getting them back in the future. Medgroup Co. loved the offer and would have signed the agreement right there, but one of our managers picked that moment to bring up another issue by asking, "Did your contract with Competitor Corp include equipment? Because if you're not under contract with us, we'll need to retrieve all of our leased computers, printers and networking equipment." Alas, Competitor Corp's agreement did include hardware and printers and networking equipment. They'd already swapped everything out with shiny new hardware maintained under Competitor Corp's own leases. And what had Competitor Corp done with our hardware? As the story was later told, CTO Dave had told them they abandoned the equipment, just wipe it, and send it all to the dump. And with that, a $1.4 million equipment loss fee was tacked onto that $1 million buyout, which was promptly refused by Medgroup Co.'s CEO. The lawyers on both sides went to work feverishly pointing at various clauses in the contracts, trying to negotiate higher ground and paint themselves as the victims in this debacle. Lawsuits were filed. Countersuits were filed. Law enforcement was called in to investigate. Newspapers ran stories about the mean-eyed company that was trying to fleece money from the poor, poor doctors. And, in the end, Medgroup Co. cut us a settlement check for $2 million. And CTO Tom? Last I heard, he was enjoying his retirement. He was never arrested, charged, or sued for his role in any of it. Our next post is by guitars_computers. This is a year old, had to wait to talk about it. I was working for a company as this weird level at support. Like I couldn't do anything, except the base level, that a semi-tech savvy person could do. Most of my work was mounting monitors, since the building was still setting up in the early days. The most tech savvy part was this story. One of their actual technicians, that is has a local admin password, asks me to map out the entire building's network ports, since we didn't have a port map for the building. After I've done this, word comes down to remap the entire floor with only odd ports needed. I organize it, so people have Wi-Fi slash work from a different area for a half day, while I unplug a floor at a time and recable it 500 ports per floor, roughly half a day once I'm done dealing with people calling to complain I killed their internet despite multiple warnings. I finally finish pulling out all of the third floor, also the exec's floor, cable so I can cable manage the new odd-only setup, when my boss calls me into a meeting room, and informs me I'm being let go. They escort me out of the building, no chance to fix up floor 3, which now has one active app. I did warn them on the way out. Our next post is by TrustMimagumaba. Long time lurker, first time poster. I just encountered two of the most clueless users ever, and I just had to share. Background: I'm working tech support in a medium size company and most users are quite nice and helpful in solving their problems, but some just seem to have no idea how the world works. I met the same kind of stupid twice the last days, so this story consists of two parts. Part 1, my program is gone. A nice lady asked me to install a program for her, as she can't do it herself, because our users don't have admin privileges on their machines. I gladly help her, it's done in less than 5 minutes. Next day she calls me, upset, and tells me the program is gone. When I try to remote to her machine, it turns out she is using a colleague's notebook and login. So, the program is not there, because it is a completely different device. Part 2, my phone is not ringing. We are not using normal phones, but a software to call and answer calls from your computer. Works pretty well so far, until this user contacted me and told me the following. When he gets a call, it doesn't ring, he just gets a notification, no audio. So I tried the obvious things first. Does Windows have the correct audio device selected? Is the audio device turned on? Are the software settings correct? I just couldn't find the problem. It took me longer than I like to admit to figure that the user simply isn't using his headset. Like, it's on his desk, he just couldn't be bothered to wear it, and only uses it after answering a call. I'm still baffled. Just how do these people think that stuff works? Black magic? Also, English is not my first language, so feel free to correct any errors and typos. Edit, typo edit 2, a little late, but it was night over here, because it gets mentioned frequently, user 2 doesn't have speakers on his computer, otherwise I would totally do what you guys are saying about letting the speaker ring. Also, he is using the system for over a year now, so either he never asked, or just recently forgot how the system works. Anyway, thank you all for the comments and your own stories, I really enjoyed reading. Our next post is by Zinosaurus. I work for a large international bank as local support. It's not a bad job by any means, but some things make me question my own sanity. The PA of some executive comes to me telling me she has a question. Apparently she needs to upload a picture to a website and she doesn't want to give a MA system. I ask her to show me what she exactly means, since whilst I do have a clue what she might be referring to, I hope with all my heart she isn't asking what I think she's asking. She proceeds by opening a mail, opens a link waiting till the page loads in the browser, clicks on the select picture button, continues to select the desired image, pauses, stares at me and asks. So I don't wanna give website access to our systems. Is this even allowed? Me trying to keep a straight face, well, that's how it generally works, yeah. Looking annoyed at me, no, but like this must be against company policy, they have to pick up the picture, Frowns, really trying to keep myself from not crying out of desperation and disbelief. Ma'am, that's not how it works. You choose a file to send them. They don't have access to anything beyond what you actively select. They don't pick up anything. After a bit more talking, she was sufficiently convinced. She told me she never saw anything like this before, which I sincerely doubt, wished me a good day, and went off to do God knows what for the remainder of the day. Worst thing is that these people make more money in a month than I do in half a year. Our next post is by Raptor Boy. Hi all, service biomedical engineer here. We do preventative maintenance and repairs on medical devices. Things like ECG, EKG for the US, machines, patient monitoring, blood pressure monitors, finger pulse meters, syringe drivers, for delivering drugs. We go to one site that we visit once a year for preventative maintenance. We sweep through the hospital over a week and try to get everything on our list. We don't do everything. OEMs do a lot of their own gear with their own field engineers. Get towards the end of our list and we are missing almost all of one type of unit, infusion pumps. It's a unit where you hang a bag of something and it delivers into a patient via tubing. Some of these units also deliver morphine via a syringe. They have a lockable case and a push button for on-demand pain relief. These units are usually everywhere. It's a small hospital and there's something like 30 on the list. We ask around and one numb nurse unit manager says, oh yeah, we keep them in this locked room. Sweet, we head on in and we find almost all the missing units. But almost all of them have signs or labels on them saying does not work, has X alarm when inserting fourth line slash syringe. This is like 70% of their fleet of these things. Luckily a lot of the repairs look to be simple, the same error on the majority and a quick inspection show the same broken door mechanism that will give an alarm from the unit and prevent medical staff using the unit. It happens when staff are a bit too rough with closing the doors that cover the fourth line when you insert it into the unit. We inform the numb and are told they know. And tech comes through every month or so to fix them up. Not according to us, we visit once a year and the hospital can log repair jobs online or call our office to organize repairs. Also, some of these labels are almost 8 months old. If someone is fixing them, it's not us, and they are not doing a good job. We ask who the tech is. They give us the name of a previous employee who hasn't been with us for 2 years. When he was on the books, this hospital was under a different contract with hours to visit the site 2 days a month. Okay. This isn't good. I make a quick call to our supplier and get confirmation that these mechanisms are available. They are and we can have them in 2 days. Enough for all the units and some spares. Other really broken units need to be sent to the OEM for repair. They really need to take better care of their stuff. I then make a call to my boss. He tells me that the site knows what contract they have. His boss pulls up the contract to confirm. They've been on this current contract for just under 2 years. One visit per year for preventative maintenance, all repairs to be raised individually, all billable. They probably change to save money. I ask how to proceed. My boss tells me he's going to inform the site contact that more than half their fleet of pain relief machines are down. And that they need to make sure that repair jobs are logged either online, by email or phone. And take photos of the room, clearly showing all the affected units, with the signage. I'll let him know we can get the majority of parts for most of the units within 2 days. We could probably recommission half the units within 3 to 5 days. Do we take all the affected units off-site? Yes, they can't use them anyway. Okay, cool. I finish my sweep, and we load all repairs into our cars, and take them back to the workshop. I order parts, and start getting the units to be sent to the OEM ready for dispatch. The next morning my boss gets a call from an angry director, asking where over half their fleet of pain relief machines are. My boss calmly informs them that they are under repair. The director says they are now out of machines and need some back now. My boss informs them that they don't work if they are faulty, we'll have some back tomorrow hopefully. They should also know how many faulty units they had, and should have raised repair tickets earlier, as per the contract. They can also call sister sites under the same brand to transfer units. We don't keep spare units of this type. The director says that our guys are meant to be there every month. My boss informs him of his current contract. One visit per year, breakdowns need to be raised individually. Since almost 2 years ago. Previous director signed it. He's going to make a formal complaint. My boss says that's within your rights, but we are within our contract. Luckily for us, these units are common, and some of the field guys might have some in their stock. I make some calls, and come up with 3 units, the guys aren't far away, and I can have them in a little over an hour. I'll let my boss know that I can most likely have 3 units back to them by this afternoon. The rest, we'll have to do wait. My boss lets the director know. They're not happy, but want them back as soon as possible. My boss advises the director we'll need a PO for all the repairs, but we'll have these 3 back today. I get the parts, repair the units, recommission them and drive them back to the site, and deliver them to the ward. The nurses are happy to see the units, the num from before isn't happy we took them all, but I'll let them know they need to tell us when stuff is faulty. We're only here once a year. We got all the units we could repair with a week. That was over half the fleet. The rest sent to the OEM took almost a month. We now get calls to go to that site for repairs almost every month now. Our next post is by Deruvian. So I've lurked around here a while, enjoying the odd horror stories here and there. Figured it's time I finally started sharing some of my own. It's a bit long so. TLDR, Pitter accountant demanded I install an urgent update. Then fought me for over a week, and wouldn't give me a time to install said update. Eventually got the update installed, and then found she was fighting me over the install, because she jacked up the accounting records, and was trying to fix them before the update. Turned out she simply didn't run the report, and it required clicking one menu item, one item in a list, and then one button to fix this, and run the report. At one job, had an accountant, who got promoted to controller, head of the accounting department, who was single-handedly responsible for no less than 7 people leaving that place in a short few months, and several more, after I left from what I have been told. Mind you, this was a small non-profit with less than 50 employees, this comes into play later. She will be referred to as Pitter Accountant. The accounting group had 3 people who accessed this one piece of software as well as another person in ours. The usual server software on our application software and the workstations have the client installed. To install an update meant everyone had to be out of that system. Anytime updates would come out, she'd be harassing me the day of release to update it. Give her the usual why, is this so urgent, blah, blah. Every time our director would say just get it done. Okay. Me, I need everyone out of the software for a few hours, so I can install your urgent update. Let me know when that's done. Pitter accountant, well we can't get out now, we have work to do. Me, well I was told this was urgent. Pitter accountant 2 days later in an email about 15 minutes before closing time, we are out of the software. You can install the update. Me, no, I cannot. It is now 15 minutes before COB, and I told you I need a few hours to complete the update. Pitter accountant, why do you need a few hours? It doesn't take that long to install software. Me, listen, I don't tell you how to do your job, don't tell me how to sew mine. Pitter accountant, well can't you just stay late, and install it when nobody is in the office? Remember I said it was a small non-profit? Overtime pretty much did not exist. And being the only IT staff, I pretty much had to be in the office when users were, unless we had some major work being performed, such as server replacements. Me, seeing as how you are in charge of the finances for the entire organization, I'm absolutely sure you are aware that we have been over budget for the entire year since the first quarter, since you decided to just create our IT budget on your own with absolutely no input from me. So to answer your question, no, I will not be staying late to install the software. Didn't hear anything back for a couple of days again, until I get harassed by the director about why this update has not been installed. At that point went and talked to the other two accounting staff and the hour staff about scheduling a time to install the update. These two I was friendly with and actually enjoyed personally interacting with, me to accountant A, hey. I'm trying to get this update installed and need everyone out of the system. Accountant A, I did my monthly work in there last week. I don't need to touch it for another few weeks. We only run those reports at the end of each month. Me. Really? Thanks. Me to accountant B, hey. I'm trying to get this update installed and need everyone out of the system. Accountant B, my work in there was done last week when we ran the reports. Me, great. Thanks. Me to ours, hey. I'm trying to get this update installed and need everyone out of the system. I hardly ever touch that system. I only use it if Peter accountant isn't here and I need to enter everybody's leave time. Me, thanks for your help. Back to my desk to fire off a reply to the director and Peter accountant. Me, I was told this update was urgent and have been trying to schedule a time to install the update since last week. I have spoken to accountant A, accountant B, and ours. They have informed me they have completed their monthly work in the system and these reports are only run at the end of each month. As I told Peter accountant, I need a few hours to complete the update. This first response from Peter accountant came 15 minutes before Cobb indicating they were out of the system. I then reiterated I needed several hours to complete the update. Peter then asked if I could work late to install the update. I reminded her we have already been over budget for months, and staying late and accruing overtime was not an option, which she should be aware of as she prepares our monthly financial reports. About another 2 days later, I finally get a response from Peter accountant, first thing in the morning, that everyone was out of the system, and it could be updated. Complete the update and all is good. Yay. Within the next couple of days I randomly stop to BS with accountants A and B, and come to find out that Peter accountant was constantly in the system, because she fucked up a number of records in the software, and couldn't figure out why. Dollar amounts were thousands off from what they should have been. Great. They're going to blame this on the update and on me. Sure enough, a day or two later Peter accountant sends me and the director email with their reports that show the discrepancy indicating this was not an issue before the update. Get up from my desk and walk to Peter accountant's office. Can you show me these reports? Peter accountant proceeds to show me. I see that she can also pull up all of the old reports that were run. Me, can you print out these two reports for me quick, so I can go try to figure out what is going on? Peter accountant prints them. I grab them from the printer and take a look. Takes me all of 20 seconds to see that there are pretty much exactly a month's worth of transactions missing from this latest report. Me in an email to Peter accountant and the director, I see in the attached report that there are no transactions listed for the past month. Can you go verify that you did in fact run the report for last month? About 20 minutes later. Email from Peter accountant, I verified that these transactions are entered, but I still cannot see them in the report. Great. Walk over to Peter accountant again. Me. Can you show me how you generate these reports? Peter accountant clicks a single menu item and brings them up. Me, wait. This report has a flag on it here. It says you prepared it, but didn't actually run it. Peter accountant selects the report and clicks the run report button. Numbers are now correct. I just let out a long sigh and walk back to my desk mumbling a very long stream of NSFW comments to myself. So glad I left that place. Our next post is by mad_rob. Hey, it's me again. The trainee from the coal plant that now works with industrial robots. I looked in my Reddit history and found out that I didn't post anything for a while. Because I have plenty of stories, there will be a few in the future. It's the same spiel as every time. I speak German as my first language, so you will find a lot of errors. Okay, let's jump to the story. Cast, me, PLC and robot programmer for a while now customer. Company that has a lot of mills, mostly Haas. When you are from the US, you can know them. Story, this customer has an robotzel from us that we installed 3 to 4 years ago. My standard is to make a backup at delivery of the robotzel and show the customer how to make the backups to an USB drive. Fast forward to now. I get a call from the customer. I switched companies 2 times since then, and he used his old KGB skills to track me down. He has a problem, the robotzel is not able to read the program data. Nice. I get to him, and have a look. In the robotzel is an old industrial PC with Windows XP embedded, shudder, which is running from an NCF card, more shudder. The partition with the program data is not readable, and I try a few things. I ask the customer for the latest backup, and goes what? He has a backup. He proudly strolls away to get it, only to find out that the latest backup is from 2 weeks after my initial backup. I ask him how many new programs he created since then, and he tells me about 25. Okay, nice. You need about 3 to 4 hours to recreate a program, so it's a lot of time lost and amp, #X200B. I tell him we can try data recovery, but the chance is not very high that it will work out. I give him the estimated numbers, and it's a lot less and a lot faster than doing everything from scratch, but tell him again that the chance is not very high. I get the work order from him and begin working on it. First recovery tool, NGT, nothing second, nothing third, hey there isn't drive, but data, nope. I wanted to give up, but found another tool my luck. But I costs a few $100. I call the customer and get the go. The tool works like charm. The customer gets a new CF card and a newest backup and is happy again. Fast forward a few weeks, I visited the customer. He tells me that there are 5 new products on the machine. I ask if he has a backup. He runs away and grabs a new USB drive. The day after, I get a phone call, the IT admin. He wants to make backups of the PC every day now. We implemented it and verified the backups. So we sort of have a happy ending here. Our next post is by chaos_is_cache. It was requested that this comment be expanded upon into its own post, so here it is in all of my terrible writing ability. I'm not an IT professional and this whole event took place more than a decade ago. It was attempted to be recreated as best as myself and one of the other parties could, while still maintaining anonymity. The company I was working for at the time was looking at selling. Before that can happen, a full inventory had to be done. One of the IT managers, Jimmy for purposes of this story, was given the responsibility of checking all of the equipment we had in our various offices' storage rooms, making sure that everything was accounted for and in working order. During the inventory, Jimmy began to notice that over the last year quite a bit of our equipment was being damaged out, but that nobody was signing the forms. Being properly concerned over this, he went to our CTO Don with explaining that either someone was either lazy, or perhaps as a worst case stealing the equipment and reselling it. Allaying his fears, Don told him he would get with the corporate security team and check the logs to see what was going on. Fast forward a couple months and all the general managers and heads of teams are flown into the main office for our end of year meeting and Christmas party. Mike, the corporate secretary team lead from my office, and I are hanging out down at the open bar making our appearance before we are allowed to leave when Jimmy comes over and asks Mike if he knows what happened to all of this missing equipment. Mike of course has absolutely no idea what's going on and tells Jimmy to email him all the information he has and he will look into it when we get back to our office. Mike hits me up about a week later and shows me this list of missing equipment and the stuff that just came from our office. Mike says has already gone and checked the things issued to our people and that anyone who had one of the missing laptops was given a significantly older model. It was also during this check that he noticed some of our equipment was straight up missing, like a whole server and its rack that had been supposedly shipped to us from the main office right before we went to the party. Mike got with Jimmy and had him check the main office storage area where he found the missing server. Mike reached out to his boss about what was going on and grabbed a plane heading to the main office, where he got with Jimmy and installed a GPS tracker that we usually used for our fleet vehicles, as well as some cameras both in the hallway to the storage area and focused directly on the rack. About a week later, the rack was gone, and Jimmy sent over the video file to Mike and his boss, where it showed our CTO Don grabbing the equipment and loading it into a local delivery company. Jimmy checks for paperwork, and all it shows is that that server had still been delivered to our office. Of course, none of this is evidence that Don was stealing from our company, and not just shitty paperwork. So Mike's boss sends a couple guys down to Jimmy and has him check the tracker. Tracker shows it at a business not too far away. Mike's boss contacts the legal team and police, and a happy little group of people all meet outside the business in question. Investigation ensues, and the police determine that our CTO had been taking newer model laptops, some monitors, and various other equipment. He would fix it up at home and sell it to his buddy, who was using it to build out his business that just happened to compete with ours. End of the day, Don got fired and arrested. I wasn't able to find any info on the sentencing, but as far as I know, he got out after a couple years, as it was non-violent. Jimmy got a promotion, and Mike got a nice little bonus that quarter. Not that it mattered. Not much after the end of the quarter, the sale of the business went through and everybody but Mike lost their job. Our next post is by Mert89OK. So a while back, I used to work as a technical support agent, level 1 or L1, for a major internet/TV/phone company. As I recall, I was having a great day, as most of the clients I got had real problems, and just before this call I had one that I should have transferred to L2. This costs money to customer, but managed to work it out. This is important for the story, as I usually helped customers with easy problems and avoided transferring them to save them money. So customer C calls and explains the issue. Me: hello, I'm me, how may I assist you today? C: hey, yes, this is C and this is my service ID. My internet and TV is not working. Me: okay, let's check your service, please hold. I already checked and it should be working as far as I can tell, but I cannot ping/get response from customer's endpoint. So I check if something major happened to the area. It seems TV and internet should be working, as we did not receive any major overarching issue in the area. Me: okay, so have you tried restarting your endpoint? C: yes, for the third time, but no dice. Me: okay, could you please tell me what do you see when you try to connect to the internet? I made a mistake here, accepting that the customer knows basic troubleshooting. C: well, nothing much really. Me: okay, let's try connecting now to our ADSL service. For those who do not know, ADSL is internet service over phone lines that require username plus PW to connect before using it. C: okay. A minute passes, hearing some muttered curses. Me: may I help? What seems to be the problem? Setting up ADSL connection was a free service, but troubleshooting it was beyond my scope, but I was trying to solve it without L2. C: I can't connect to the damn thing and I need to work. Even my damned monitor is broken now. This. Me: may I ask what happened and to the monitor? A sneaking suspicion starts crawling up my spine. C: yeah, it was just all black. I came home, plugged in my laptop and my monitor, but it won't show anything. Me: sir, would you please try to press the power button on the monitor? C: already tried it. I told you it must be broken, it does not even light up. Me: sir, please try and turn on the lights for me in the room. C: it does not work either. Me: so your internet does not work because there is no power in your house. I think you should contact your power provider. Do you want me to search for their hotline? C: please do. Our next post is by Gibson_Mel. A self-confessing food thief started our org's path down the limitation of our email distribution lists. Here's how it happened. We worked in the headquarters of a nationally recognized organization, with hundreds of people and a ton of interns who were very overworked. One day, as I was about to head home, I received an email addressed to everyone in the organization, way back in the 90s when that was still allowed. It went something like this: hi, my name is Joe, intern. My manager had me working on a project that took me almost the entire day. By the time I had finished, all the lunch street vendors had gone home, and I did not bring a lunch. I had not had breakfast, and in retrospect, I probably should have. By this time, I was starving, so I did something shameful that I will now confess to. I stole food. I looked in the refrigerator, and there it was. A shiny, delicious-looking apple. I was famished, and in a moment of weakness, I ate it. I ate it all, even the core. Only the stem was left. So to whoever owned that apple, I'm sorry. Just let me know if that apple was yours, and I will pay you back tomorrow. Thank you, and again, I apologize. It was one of the greatest emails I had read in my life. That dude also got more invites to lunch for the next couple of weeks than I had ever seen. And oh, the head of the org had me shut down the capability of just anyone, like interns, being able to send an email to the everyone group. Our next post is by Speddy23. Back in 2005, we did some random work, a real estate type business for PCs plus central file slash app server, and they used their ISP for email. After doing a few fairly routine jobs, slow computer, can't print, that kind of thing, we worked out that they had zero backups and no backup solution slash plan. Being a fairly responsible person, I let them know this, and they really should do something about it. I was just fobbed off at the time. I even prepped a quote for 3 external drives and some basic scripting to handle their simple backup needs. We're talking sub 500 Australian dollars here. Emailed with a note explaining what it is, how they could keep a drive off-site, and why it's a really good idea to substantially reduce the chance of disaster. Again, fobbed off. I'm guessing they really didn't want to pay for something they didn't need. You can probably see where this is going. The inevitable happens. The single hard drive in their server fails. After the usual "how could you let this happen," I point out how I mentioned this to them and showed them the aforementioned email 15 years later and can remember what the owner of this company said to me next: "You should have insisted we need it." Our next post is by Themazinges. Here is a quick one. Just fielded a call from a user that said his monitor was no longer working. It took about 10 minutes of me asking before he told me he changed something. Turns out he went out and bought 2 iffy USB adapters and plugged one into his monitor's USB port and one into his PC. Then proceeded to try and connect his computer to the monitor through Wi-Fi. It took almost 15 minutes for me to explain that is not how it works, even though he insisted it would. He is an accountant, BTW. He then proceeded to send me a link to a monitor that can connect via Wi-Fi, as though that somehow proved his Wi-Fi adapter's trick works, and I just didn't want to help him figure it out. Also got annoyed that he spent $140 on a Wi-Fi adapters and apparently can't return it. Not sure why though, and not sure why he spent $140 on it. He is going to be less happy when he finds out I'm billing him for the time. I bet he is going to spend the next few hours trying to get it to work with a chant of "I can't wait to prove them wrong" on repeat in his head. The problem with being the smartest guy in the room is that you need to actually be the smartest guy in the room. Because you slash Ericalan247 introduced me to r slash Steris about Kevinus of that mail, like my client's many non-tech adventures I have started, posted his various bumbling there. Here is the first one: https://www.reddit.com/r/steris-about-kevin/comments/hnmqfr/my_personal_kevins_testicle_adventure/. Our next post is by Sockless England. First time poster, and just a bad typist, so be gentle. Any issues were caused by the liberal application of single malt support lubrication fluid used after the incident. I work for a large GPS slash cellular tracker company as a support engineer for the last 11 years. Last week a customer called in with units they needed to do a radio FW update on, but the update failed every time on every unit. Data to their server and our maintenance server worked fine, as did the initial check-in to start the update, but the file download itself failed. After much back and forth and finally obtaining a unit we could pull debug from, I determined that the unit was failing when it switched from UDP, the normal mode the units send data in, to FTP, required by the modem manufacturer to download their firmware file. Usually FTP or TCP problems are simply the customer's IT or finance department provisioned the SIM/private app wrong and did not allow the appropriate protocols or ports. But today they managed to find a new way to break things. In order to save money on the private app, they decided to not pay for DNS support on the network, and of course when we told the radio where the update file was, we gave the URL for the FTP server along with one-time credentials. No DNS equals no download. Simple solution, we can create a temporary rule on our server to provide the IP instead of the URL. To allow them to update their units, there is a reason, a really stupid but necessary one, that we default to URL instead of IP address. So I request the changes from our prod ops team, and tell the customer to try again in the morning, after we update systems overnight. Ticket moved to pending resolution, and on to the next. The next morning I'm greeted by a barrage of "this is still not working, fix it new wow emails," and as the customer starts their day 3 hours before me, there are quite a few. So I grab a friendly developer and hop on a conference call with Screenshot to watch live debug as the customer attempts her update. Units boots, makes calm connection, checks maintenance server, receives asterisk "why you have an update here" a response with an IP address instead of a URL, attempts to DNS the IP address, fails, ends update. Wait, what? I gave you an IP address, WTF, do you want a DNS server? My developer throws up his hands and says once we hand the IP address to the radio the entire update is handled by the radio itself without our processor interfering at all. So off to our vendor support number, ring ring asterisk EXPLAINS issue vendor, oh yeah, that is functioning as designed, if we cannot get a DNS server, how are we supposed to know the address of the FTP server? So we failed the update out, if we cannot reach a DNS server. Me, but we give you the IP address and port vendor, but we still have to look it up to resolve the address. Me, asterisk LOOKS for bottle of scotch that is not empty and amp, hash X200B. Now I have to explain to the customer why we need to get on a call with their carrier to see if we can convince them to temporarily enable DNS to get these updates done. And then begin the head-to-wall process of writing a ticket to our vendor trying to explain why this is not a very good idea. TL, doctor, when given a phone number, we like to flip through the white pages to find it and confirm it. Our next post is by I_need_morecoffee. So, Sunday morning at 10 a.m. as I'm getting ready to head out for a day at the nearby lake, my phone dings. Subject, serious issue. I was near my work computer, sat down, started to call the user, and I read the ticket the computer had blue screened. The user had tried to shut it down for the weekend, but I guess it blue screened in the process. Crap, this could have waited. By the time I read the ticket all the way through, the user answered. Me, mustering up my, "I'm not mad that you sent this in on a Sunday" voice. "Hi there. User, oh, hi. I was not expecting you to call me today." Me, internal sigh, "not a big deal. Have you tried to hard reset it yet?" User, "what's that?" Thinking to myself, "this is why you get paid, this is why you get paid." Press the power button until the light turns off, and press it again, to power it back on. User, "oh, it is powering up now, and I can sign in. Thank you for the call." Me, "no problem, have a nice Sunday." "All well, it was 5 minutes on a Sunday, that means 5 minutes I can use to create a Reddit post on Monday, right?" Our next post is by Buvert. "I'm relatively new to the IT industry, and work as a service coordinator at a small MSP. I don't typically work tickets, but I do try to ask the easy questions, and walk users through little things, if I think it can be handled in 5 to 10 minutes. This morning I got a call from a user, having issues with setting up a monitor. She had been working remotely, and needed a second monitor, so she picked one up from the office, and was having issues getting it to work at home. Her first issue was finding a cord, to connect the monitor to her laptop, but thankfully she was able to track one down. That is where our conversation picks up and amp. #X200B. User: I found a cord for my monitor, but when I plug it in both screens go black me. Okay, what kind of cord is it? User: *DESCRIBES an analog cord me. HMM. You probably just need to change the input on your monitor. Do you see any buttons on the side of your monitor? User: No. Me: What about on the bottom? User: Yes. Proceeds to describe said buttons asterisk. Me: Great. Please press the menu button for me. User: Nothing is happening. Me: Is the monitor turned on? User: How would I know if it's on or not? Me: When you press the power button, does the light turn on or off? User: HMM. Me: Is the power cord plugged into the wall? User: I need a power cord and amp. #X200B. Once the cord in question was retrieved from the office, we were able to get her monitor set up the way she liked them without issue. Our next post is by Osmius Biter. I wish I was making this one up. I'm a senior network engineer in a school. Currently we are running a number of classes online via Microsoft Teams. Today I was sitting in my office when a member of staff poked their head in and informed me that they had a Teams call scheduled later in the day. They weren't a teacher, so they wouldn't be running it, but instead providing support. As they had never used Teams before, I showed them how it worked and told them they just needed to click the join meeting button when they were ready. I, foolishly, believed that was the last that I would see of them 5 minutes later. User: Does the office desktop have speakers built in? Me: No, it doesn't, but in the drawer next to it are a set of headphones with a microphone built in. Just plug them in and it'll all work. 2 minutes later. User: How do I connect the headphones? Now at first I think that maybe they are talking about default audio devices. The headphones are plugged in but not working or connecting to Teams. So I go to the office, explaining how to change the default device as I go. When I get there, the headphones are on the desk, unplugged. User: See, they aren't connected. I'm going to ignore the fact that they let me go through the whole explanation about default devices without telling me that's not what they were asking about. If they are not familiar with technology, I can understand that being a bit confusing. What I'm not going to ignore is the headphones unplugged on the desk. Me: So you can't connect them? User: Yes. How do I plug them in? Me: You put the end of the lead in the headphone slot. User: Me: The hole in the front of the computer. User: Huh. Me: The green circle. User: Me: Next to the USB port. User: Me: Do you see the little drawing of the headphones? Points this one here. User: Oh, okay. I understand that some people aren't great with tech, but considering that they had a smartphone on the desk next to the keyboard that also has a headphone port, this is one I'm going to chalk up to willful ignorance. Our next post is by Quimgracado9. As previously mentioned, senior tech support for the fruit-based enterprise. Haven't felt the need to write something up for a while, but this one was fun. Customer calls in about his laptop having screen issues. It flickers the more it is raised, until it turns solid white. However, when the screen is about two-thirds shut, it works fine again. Now, the model before his has a free repair program for screen issues, but the symptom is a complete loss of backlight. You can only tell the screen is on by pointing a flashlight at the fruit logo to make an impromptu backlight. He had visited an authorized service provider who quoted him for an out-of-warranty screen replacement. Laptop is 2.5 years old. He had called yesterday and told the exact same story to a colleague, but he wants a different solution, aka free repair, because of the precedent set by the repair program of the previous model. After explaining to him that his laptop cannot be covered because it's not the same model, neither is the symptom the same, he says, "I don't understand the need to replace the screen when it's working fine, when it's two-thirds down." Well, no, if you can't use the screen it's upright then it's not working fine. If your car is stuck in second gear, it's running, but it's not fine. After a bit more insisting that we weren't going to cover his issue as it stands, and there's no reason to cover the issue for free, he says, "How do I make you open a repair program? Write up a complaint and let people that have the issue sign up. How many people does you need to open one? It's not an per demand thing. There either needs to be an assumed flaw or a large amount of people reporting the same issue and the same cause. A complaint doesn't do that, because it's specific to you, and there's no exact number of people that we require to open one. If anything, you can go to our official forum and explain your situation. If there's a large number of people reporting the same, the mods may take it up the chain. So your solution is to make a forum post instead of fixing my problem? A solution has been offered, and we support it. The issue to you is that it has a cost. We currently do not feel it's a widespread issue to the point it requires a repair program. If you feel it is, I'll write it down as a complaint on your end. If you want others to express their opinion, the forum post is the best option, because we can take action upon it if needs must. Click people that think the world revolves around them annoy me. Our last post is by Runta1980. Thought of an old one from back when fax machines were still newish, and were the go-to thing, before scanning and email. This is about 19 years ago, when I worked at an office supply slash equipment sales slash service type of store, not a major brand, just a local company. Edit, I should have said still commonly used, not newish in the above sentence. We had a customer come, and wanted a fax machine for his home office, nothing too major, just a plain fax. We had some smaller Panasonic models that used thermal film and had pretty basic features. I showed him the floor model and he said he'd take one. I explained it was a pretty easy setup, just plug in the power cord and phone line into the port mark jack. Thankfully this is also when companies were brilliant enough to cover the phone port with a plastic tab you had to break off to plug anything into it. I asked if he thought he'd need help setting it up, and if so there would be a minor on-site setup charge, like $25-30 I think. He declined and said he could handle it, it sounded simple, and he wasn't an idiot. I got him all set and wished him a good day. Now normally this is where the story should end, but it wouldn't be in Tales from Tech Support if it was that simple. I want to say about an hour or two passed till the office gets a phone call from this guy, and he is pissed. I take the call, since I sold the machine, and I'm also one of the techs. Me, surprise DA, DUMB asterisk customer me, hello, this is me, I believe I'm the guy you spoke to in the store when you got the fax machine. What seems to be the problem, DA? DA, this thing doesn't work. Me, okay, what exactly is the problem? Is it not powering on? No dial tone? There should only be two things plugged into the machine. Are there any error codes on the display? DA, it's powered on, and no errors on the display. I'm not an idiot, I set this up like you said. It's not sending my fax out. Me, oh, well that is a problem. Do you have a dedicated fax line, or are using a shared line for fax slash telephone? DA, dedicated line. Me, yes, does the fax machine have its own telephone number, or is it using your business phone number? DA, it's on the same number as my business. Me, okay, it's a shared line. Is anyone trying to use the phone when you send a fax? DA, no. Me, okay, well why don't you try and send me a fax here at the office, here's the number. Can you call me back after you send it? DA, okay, but I'm telling you this won't work. Me, let's give this a try, and if there's still an issue I'll come out and take a look. No charge if it's faulty equipment. I'll bring another machine just in case. DA, sighing, fine. Let me hang up and try this, I'll call you back. Me, okay, I wait by our fax machine, and within a minute or two I get a fax from this guy. It's an invoice for a customer he needed to bill. I grab it and head to a phone, waiting for his call back. He calls in, and the secretary transferred him over to me. Me, hello, everything looks good on my end. Are you sure you had the right number when you tried to fax your customer? DA, bullshit, there's no way this worked. Me, I'm sorry. DA, there is no way in hell you got my fax. Me, sir, I'm not sure what you mean. I'm looking at the invoice you sent me. Why do you say it isn't working? At this point I'm very confused why he's so angry and is dead set that the machine isn't working. DA, there is no way you got my fax, I'm holding goddamn thing in my hand. Me. I honestly had no words, nothing. How did he think faxes worked? How do I explain this without pissing him off further? I was so caught off guard I must have been silent for about a minute when he chimes in. DA, well. Me, sir, the fax machine doesn't send your paper to me. It scans it and sends me a copy that my machine prints out. I can send you the invoice back to your machine to show that I did get it. DA, oh, no, that's fine. Click. I honestly have no idea how he thought the machine worked. Black magic? Sorcery? Was the machine supposed to teleport the paper through the phone line? We had an anti-stress gag poster on a metal cabinet in the back, the one with the big circle with bang head here till stress goes away. I just walked into the back and slowly started tapping my head on it. Another tech walked by and asked what was up. All I could come up with was not now, I need to get this out of my head. Told him what happened later, and he almost fell out of his chair laughing. That's it for Edit Reddit. I hope you enjoyed. Please leave a good rating, as that really helps me out.